Yo, what up? Welcome to Free Refills Podcast, where we come together as youth leaders to discuss the realities of leading in youth ministry. Our hope is you leave refilled, refueled, and re-energized to carry on in ministry. I'm your host, Boss, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm joined by my co-host, Maggie.
Hey, hey, hey.
Coming to you from Howell, Michigan. Typically, we have a special guest with us, but today it's Maggie and I. So either you're welcome or we apologize. We'll let you be the decider of that. The reason why it's the two of us and only the two of us is because we wanted to take this moment to have a conversation about building better teams. Our theme this month is exactly that, building better teams. This is key to creating culture, carrying out the vision of ministry, and impacting our community. Not only is this an important aspect to focus on for staff hires, but also for volunteers as well. And Maggie and I wanted to have a chat about leading both genders, but then also both of our experiences of being on staff and having volunteers, and then also being a volunteer for a staff. That's why it's just the two of us. We thought it would make it a simple chat and a conversation about this so that you could hear from us before we brought in a special guest to talk about their experience. So Maggie, to set us up in the conversation, or to at least start us off, why is it important for us to build better teams?
Yeah, so I mean, my background is mostly in young adult ministry, more recently in youth ministry. But in every team I've been on, I find that the health of the ministry starts with the team, with the leadership team, right? Yeah. We've all heard that health is a trickle down from the top down. And so that starts with healthy teams led by healthy leadership. And so if we want our students to grow into healthy, mature, multiplying believers, then we have to exhibit that in some form within our teams.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I think that many times, I know for myself, and I would assume this for a lot of people because I've been in multiple spaces that I've heard this, especially when we talk about volunteers, I think we've all been kind of subject to hearing a plea from the pulpit, from the stage, or from an announcement space, asking for people to come and hang out with teenagers. And when you really get down to it, the unintended consequence of saying it's simple, it's 1 hour a week, it's this, it's this, it's this. We've boiled it down to such a simplistic time frame because we're hoping that we've set the bar really low for people to join in with us. But what we've actually done is we're really just putting ourselves in a posture where we're on our knees begging, going, please. And if you have a pulse, we'll take you. If you're breathing, we'll take you. And the unintended consequence of that is then we don't have better teams. Mm-hmm. And we have potentially a pretty transient group, which is not what students need, which is not what kids need, which is not what anybody needs. And that makes it harder to do ministry. Tell us, like, what you've been on the staff, talk about that, about like what it was like leading volunteers.
Yeah, well, I will say too, like, I get that struggle of not having a lot of resources.
Yeah, right.
and not having a big congregation. I sure. Grew up from like birth to fifth grade, we went to a rural church. And so I understand that, like, there are some people that's just their reality.
Oh, right.
But as a staff member, as someone who has worked on a staff and had to recruit volunteers, we would always say that our volunteers were the backbone of our ministry, which is true.
Yeah.
But I'm sure all of us have countless stories of situations where we onboarded a volunteer that we didn't vet very well, and something happened. And if we don't have that story on our team, we know of a ministry that where that happened, where either a volunteer had an inappropriate relationship with a student, or a volunteer had an inappropriate conversation with the student, overshared, or shared some theological beliefs that the ministry did not hold to. It's, I don't know, I've been thinking more and more about the fact that our volunteer, leading volunteers is a lot like discipleship. And if we want our students to be discipled well, we have to pour into our volunteers in the same way. Because really they're the shepherds. When it gets down to it, we are just kind of like the team managers. I don't,
That's good. You touched on something, you know, talking about, you know, something, we bring somebody on, we onboard them, and then something happens and it surprises us. And that points to, that points back to us as the staff member, the leader, the, you know, whatever your title is, where you're the shepherd of that group. And you're welcoming people in to join with you in this, in the ministry. That points back on us saying we didn't do our due diligence. Like we rushed to get them with students, and we didn't go back and go, wait a second, I'm here to protect and foster a community of a certain type of atmosphere here. And so every, like, we almost need to be protectors of that bubble and be like, hold on, nobody just gets in. We need to make sure that you check out before you can come hang out with students. I mean, there's tons of rules and regulations and laws and all sorts of stuff for that reason. But asking the questions, you know, going down, like potentially having a physical list in front of you, setting the expectations in front, you know, to the volunteer, to the potential volunteer. And I'm of the nature that I don't want to be a leader who says, you know, get somebody into the space that then says, oh yeah, and, or something like that, to then say, oh, there's another thing that I forgot to tell you that is also part of this role. I would rather tell somebody everything up front about what they can expect. And then if there's unexpected things, what I'm going to do as my part to help them in that process. And I would rather sit at a table with them and scare them away from this whole process than to just say, come on in and we'll figure it out as we go. Because that leads to really sticky, bad situations. If we put it bluntly.
And even if you already have a relationship with the person, I think it's good to just have a standardized way of asking the hard questions, because as like, I've also been in the other seat where someone was trying to recruit me to become a volunteer. And because we had a relationship, they thought they knew things that they didn't actually know. And so they made assumptions about my gifting and about my interests that either they were completely wrong about, or they could have been completely wrong about, but they didn't ask the question. They just assumed and then pigeonholed me into a position that didn't fit well. I think this is kind of laughable how extreme this is, but my husband is a worship pastor. And when we, so at our last church and at our current church, if I have expressed any interest in wanting to be on the worship team, I have to apply online and I have to audition and go through the interview with him just like anyone else. And when other people hear about that, they laugh and they think that he's being pretty militant. But I mean, it it's good because it helps keep him to a standard.
Right.
And it makes sure that, you know, I haven't sung in 2 years.
Right.
Maybe I probably am not good anymore.
Sure.
You know, it protects everybody.
Right. Exactly. It does protect everybody, and it protects the people that you serve and you're there to serve. I imagine that when people hear that they were like, you had to what? Mm-hmm. To do what? You know, and obviously the scale change when scale changes and different contexts mean different things. And depending on who's the leader, that also means like what's being checked, what's not being checked. But having a standardized onboarding process for anyone in any role is all pointing back to it communicates your values, and it communicates mm-hmm. to them that this is important. I remember when I would sit down with a potential leader and I would tell them that this is a commitment. At that point, like we had determined, we had said, you know, I'm asking you for 4 years, because what we would do is we would start them. We would, ideally, I would like to see somebody start with freshmen in the high school ministry and help graduate them. Or I would say, I'm asking you for a commitment of until they graduate, because that is what these students need.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you know, people would be like, whoa. And I'm like, but we're going to take it a year at a time. And I'm with you the whole way. And I'm going to do these things. And we're asking you to do these things. And we'll make this as easy of a process as possible. You had mentioned earlier, you know, about a trickle down effect. And I have in years of ministry thought about that and thought through this concept and have literally flipped it from a trickle down effect. And hopefully I can tell it in just a few minutes, but I think of it in the trickle down effect of a pyramid. And you know, it's like, okay, you got the leader up top and you said, okay, the trickle down effect. Well, that means that if the leader's up top, then that means that at the bottom is the people you're serving. And so then I'm thinking, well, that's not a whole lot of pressure at the person up top.
Mm.
They can come and go and move pretty quickly, and they don't think about, oh, everything else is pretty much going to stay the same without me. But I flip it on its head, and I wish I had a visual on the screen and I could like draw it up with my finger or something. But if you're just listening to it, draw a pyramid and put several layers and stuff and blocks on it. Now turn it upside down. And then do like a cloud on top of that. You've got an ice cream cone with ice cream in it. The sweetest part about student ministry is the experience with students, and they're the ice cream.
Yeah.
And us as the leaders, we're at the very bottom. That means that there's a lot of pressure on us. And this is a waffle cone illustration. Waffle cones, we've all had them. And if you haven't, go get a waffle cone, try it out. But the thing with waffle cones is that they're brittle. And if a place cracks, who gets affected?
Hmm.
Ice cream. It starts to leak out. Those are students. If yeah. we don't have a good team and we're not supporting them and they're not able to be supported and we're not supporting students that way, then things are going to be affected and we're going to have a problem. And so that's why building a better team is so important, is because it builds on each other and it makes the next group ahead of you that much better and that much sweeter if we keep going with this waffle cone illustration.
I like it, and now I want some ice cream.
Yes, great. ice cream all around, but get it in your own spaces. So let's talk about our experiences, because we know each other and we've talked about this a little bit, but let's talk about what it's like being a volunteer mm-hmm. a little bit. And we'll probably backtrack and go back to being on staff and some of those things too. But let's talk about what it's like to be a volunteer for someone in a ministry and some of the things, maybe your experiences where you've said, this was really good, this was not so great. Not, we're not trying to bash anybody, but we can learn from this as leaders. So go ahead, share what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, well, just in contrast, so when I was on staff and had volunteers, I was in a young adult ministry role where I had a male counterpart.
Mm.
And so it made it really, not easy, but a lot cleaner to lead male and female volunteers.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm in a volunteer role in a youth ministry where there is not a female counterpart,
okay,
staff member. And so it's just the male lead and he's my point of contact. Mm-hmm. And I have been so impressed with how he has led me because it's been appropriate and just really clear expectations, but also it's not all business. Mm. And so I think sometimes in the past when I've been in other volunteer roles, I have felt like if it was a male who was overseeing me, I had felt like we could only talk business because he was afraid to get personal, because if it got personal, then that opened the door to something inappropriate.
Yeah.
And with ministry, like our faith integrates into every part of our lives. And so right. If we're going to go back to the illustration or the topic of the fact that leading teams kind of looks a lot like discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Discipleship is you talk about your personal life too.
Right.
And so every time we meet, we try to meet once a month. We go through this kind of grid of questions called RPMs. Okay. So he asks me, how am I doing relationally, physically, mentally, spiritually?
Mm-hmm.
And so it starts with that relational, like not all of it is about how I'm connecting with students, how I'm leading small group leaders. It's about my faith, my relationship with God, my relationship with my husband, my family, my friends, my spiritual growth, how am I doing with God? And so I have really, really appreciated the fact. I just feel like he sees me as a person in a way that maybe in other volunteer circumstances, I felt like a mechanism, not a person.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. So I've grown up in the church. And so like, I don't know if it's, I think it, again, it's all for good reason. There's always good. There's always reason behind like, here's this, this is why we do it this way. Everybody has a history as to why some rule was created, or protocol or policy, whatever you call it. But even when you just said like, the RPM and you said like relationally, okay, cool. That's an easy question. But then you said physically, okay. Mm-hmm. Inside, I was like, whoa, like that was my initial reaction. Cause I was like, wait, I don't know if I would be in a spot where I'd be like, can I ask that question? Is that appropriate? I don't know. Like it.
Yeah.
I'm probably expressing a lot of things that I would assume probably a lot of men go like, I want to do this well, but I don't know how to do it. And I don't want to like, here I am going like, I don't want to be weird around other women, but
well, and
okay, what am I supposed to do? You know, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
So let me talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. That question isn't like, how are you looking physically?
No. Right. No, exactly. Right.
It's like, hey, are you getting a chance to do hobbies that you enjoy regularly? Are you getting a chance to move your body regularly? Because we know that affects endorphins and our mood. And so it's stuff like that. It's not just like, how's the scale going?
Right. Yeah,
if he asked me that, I would slap him.
Well, sure. Right. Rightfully so. You should. But it's almost like this, again, there are reasons why I feel the way I feel because of years of other people messing it up and messing it up for the rest of us. I mean, it's why there's warning labels on everything. Somebody mm-hmm. did something with that, that they caused that warning label. But how do we do that? How do I do that as a man appropriately, that it's like, hey, I'm asking you these questions because I care about you as a person. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, you know this, but there is a, in our society today, it's like, okay, there's men that have overstepped their bounds mm-hmm. and have done the absolute wrong thing. There's other men that are like, I am freaked out.
Yeah.
Because if I say anything that might be taken out of context, that not the way that I intended it to be, I'm hosed, I'm done. Mm-hmm. So then they avert and go the opposite direction and go, you know what? I'm just not even going to do anything.
Yeah.
Well, Can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah. I've been in other situations where a supervisor in a church did make me feel super uncomfortable, and it did get really inappropriate, even though I knew that wasn't his intention. His words made me uncomfortable. So I think this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning with having a standardized way of onboarding people. This is where I think it's also helpful to have a standardized way of checking in and engaging with your team, because the current high school pastor that I'm serving under, when he onboarded me, he said, hey, we're going to meet monthly. If we can't do it in person, we'll do it over the phone or on Zoom. And these are the four areas that we're going to talk about. And he explained RPMs to me. And he asks me the same questions every time. And that might sound rote or boring, but for me as a volunteer, it is clarity is kind. So it's kind to me, for me to know I'm about to enter into this conversation. These are the questions that are going to be asked of me. Mm-hmm. And if a different question is asked, then I get to follow up with, is there a reason you asked that question? Mm. Is there a reason that we're talking about this? Is it because of my performance? Mm. Or, and if not, sure. Why are we talking about this?
Right, right. Yeah.
So I think it's setting expectations.
Yep.
And also guidelines for the staff member to make sure they don't veer off into a topic that is maybe a little uncomfortable for a volunteer who's not your same gender.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I've learned through my years of experience that transparency is key. And open, like upfront communication of just saying, here's what we're going to do here. I'm going to tell you this, but then transparency too, of just like, hey, I'm going to let somebody else know where I'm, like, if they need to know where I'm at or who I'm meeting with, like my calendar, my schedule, like when I was a part of a staff team, completely shared, there was mm-hmm. nothing off limits. It was like, hey, yeah. I just want to make sure that people know where I'm at. And it's not so they're like, it's full transparency across the board. I learned that as being in education. I was brought into that, like, I mean, we were brought into like, close up your Facebook, close up all these things, like basically your entire personal life, put it in a closet and forget about it because we've got to keep that separate. But it was transparency of, in order to do this well and right, like you need to be transparent with people. And
yeah.
And maybe that's fear mongering. I don't know, but.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, also as you're talking, I have recently come to the realization, maybe like this is just in the last couple of weeks, that So I'm on the teaching team with our student ministries, and sometimes that requires a lot more back and forth communication about services and scheduling. And so I, a couple times, would just like shoot him a text about something. And I started realizing a pattern that he, when he initiates conversation, only does it over Slack, which is like, you know, if you don't know what Slack is, it's basically like an IMing system that can connect to your email, that is accessible to other people on your staff team. And so I started noticing that when he initiates conversation, he never texts me. If I text him, he'll respond, but usually if he initiates, it's never via text. And so I started catching on to that recently and was like, oh, this is probably a boundary. So I've started now initiating conversation with him over Slack just to make sure I'm not crossing any boundaries. So I think it's also on the volunteer to be aware of how and when the person who's leading you is communicating and trying to follow cues to keep your staff team healthy and protected as well. So it's not just on the staff, it's on the volunteer.
Yeah. And it all, I think it all comes back to us as the leader of that group of like setting those boundaries, setting up policies, protocols, consistent protocols that are followed, that can create boundaries that people can then operate inside of without a fear of, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? And, obviously regular communication as well. Okay. So can you talk about as a volunteer from that perspective, what is it that you, maybe you've already touched on this, but like, what is it that you need from the staff member, from the leader of the ministry to be better or be at your best? I shouldn't say better, but be at your best.
I wonder if this changes based on the personality of the person.
Sure.
But my personality is I need clearly communicated expectations. Because if I don't know the expectations, I can't meet the mark. I can't perform well. And I hate using the word perform, but you guys know what I mean.
Right.
And I think that that is so important, that having clearly communicated expectations is so important that it warrants for staff members, you asking someone else to look at how you're communicating expectations, because I have experienced this so many times where someone else will be thinking that they're communicating something very well and very clearly. And I'm like, nope, I'm not getting what you're putting out at all. And so as leaders, as staff leaders, having the humility to basically allow someone else to tear apart how you're communicating things to your volunteers.
Sure.
And that is a kindness. Like we said, clarity is kindness. And having another person put your communication under a microscope to make sure that you are being as clear as you possibly can, so that your volunteers can be as prepared as they possibly can, so that your students can be served as well as they possibly can be. So yeah, I think for me anyway, it's clarity of expectations. And again, the current ministry I'm serving with, he gave me a document the very first meeting before I even signed on. He's like, these are the things that I would expect of you. Here's the cadence of how often I want you to meet with small group leaders. Here's how often I would want you to teach if you're going to do the teaching thing. And this is how long messages are. This is generally how our services run. So I went in knowing exactly what was expected of me, the time commitment. And then I was able to communicate, okay, these are the things I'm going to struggle with,
mm-hmm.
just based on my margin and how I'm wired. And so therefore, because we had that conversation at the outset, he is now in those monthly meetings where we talk about our RPMs, able to ask specifically about the potential downsides of working with me that I made him aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I'm very similar in the communicate with me up front, communicate me with, and keep communicating with me, mm-hmm. inform me of what's happening. Because on the other side of the paywall of staff, it's like, you're hearing about things that I'm not hearing about because I don't mm-hmm. sit in your staff meetings. So if there's some changes coming, communicate with me.
Yep.
Inform me of what's happening. If I have a very specific role, well, I would also like for you to share with us about how my specific role is being affected, yeah. so that then I can lead whoever I'm leading.
Yeah.
I'm also in a spot where I appreciate when a leader says or recognizes in themselves, I'm not great here, mm-hmm. but you care about this. And that is a value to us. So would you come with me or would you help me understand this space better?
Yeah.
So that then I can vouch for this or I yeah. can fight for this because, and not making my addition to the ministry an outsider thing, but of a like, no, this is part of our ministry. I hope I'm making yeah. sense with that. And it's in those moments where for my personal self, so I can't speak for anybody else, but I can speak to like, if that isn't happening and communication is lacking, then what that the product and what comes from that is, though, you don't value me then.
Yep.
And it's at that point then that volunteers go, well, it seems like this is running fine without me and I won't be missed.
Mm-mm.
And my time is possibly being wasted. So I need yeah. to go give it to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've learned in my own leadership of like, okay, if I'm in that spot, I need to remember that. And I need to remember that my giftings are limited.
Yeah.
And they are different.
Yeah.
And somebody else can probably do it better than me.
Well, and going back to the gender conversation, I mean, in our first meeting that I had with my high school pastor, he straight up said, you're a woman. So he didn't, good. You know, try to ignore my gender for sake of things being uncomfortable. He was like, hey, you're a woman and our students need to hear a female perspective from stage because half of our students are female. So right. We currently don't have a female voice on the teaching team and I need that. So I need you to do this.
Hmm.
And so even just acknowledging the inherent power that I hold as a woman.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have access to was so refreshing for me and freed me up to live in that createdness that, you know, the unique way God created me as a woman that I can minister to half of his students.
Yes.
In ways that he never could.
Right.
So yeah, I just think acknowledging the gender difference. Right. People are so afraid to acknowledge stuff like that. But man, that was powerful for me.
But and also like it's not even. But also, you know, to add on to it, it's not even that you were able to speak to half. It was you're able to speak to all.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the other oh, half yeah. needs See, to looking hear at that you too.
Correcting me. Yeah.
Right. Like yeah. I'm not correcting. It's just more
no.
You
no,
they
are, though.
They I mean, also need to know it too, because yeah. because we
I need to hear you say that, because I often think that my voice is only reserved for women or girls, and that's not true.
Yeah. No, not at all. I men, boys, teenage dudes, whatever, they need to hear women's voices from a spot of a stage, from a spot of power, from a spot of authority, to be able to understand and undo some of these things that have been learned for so long. Hmm. Where it's what winds up happening is that is men, myself probably included, pigeonhole women and go, oh, you can only do this.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen it with my own eyes some other place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely, that's it. Like you should be, that's awesome. It's great. So I'll share a story here about a time where I was on staff and in the position that we were in a large church. And so I want to caveat with that I saw the uniqueness of our space, but I was over my position was such that I was over men volunteers, and I was managing them as they led the teenage boys in small groups. And there was I had a counterpart who was over the females and over the women. Well, she retired. So then that left me to then manage all of the volunteers, which is great. Well, I sent an email to all of the women volunteers because I wanted to get together with them as a whole group, because I had been doing that same thing with men. I had been setting up breakfast and going to the breakfast as a group with them because I wanted to help foster a community amongst the volunteers and create spaces where they could lean on each other. Because I knew myself, I was like, I'm a staff member. I don't know the full struggles of what's going on, or I don't know the full experiences and the ins and outs of being week to week in a small group. So anyway, that's a long setup for this, but I sent this email and I said, I'm taking you to breakfast. We're able to provide this for you. But I'd love to connect with all of you. And then I apologized. I said, I apologize. It was my attempt at a joke. And I said, I apologize if I come across kind of odd. I only really know how to communicate to my wife. And I thought I was communicating well as a joke. It wasn't fully, mostly it was taken as a joke, but there were some who were like, you can talk to us the same way as anybody else. And I thought, you're right. I apologize. My fault. I did not mean that by that. And I learned in that lesson, like, okay, what I thought was funny and might have been funny, and some could take it as funny, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was possibly disrespectful, because it was, I'm potentially treating people or seeing people and going, oh, I'm weirded out by this. This is strange. I don't know how to do this. And so, and then we get in the space and it's completely, nobody was looking at me odd or whatever. And I just wanted to share that because it's like, yep, I've misstepped. I've done things. I've said things unintentionally, or what I thought was an intentional thing didn't work out the way I thought it would. And so anyway, probably a story that doesn't really connect with anything, but that was my experience. But from there, I was at least able to create I intentionally sought out just the women who had somebody leading them. And I said, I need to step into this space. I'm not just going to leave them unattended of like, well, that's a woman and I can't be a part of that because they're volunteers too. And so I just stepped into it and things went well after that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's always going to be, somebody's always going to feel uncomfortable with something, even if you do it perfectly. So even if you hadn't made that joke, who knows? Somebody may have been uncomfortable with the fact that you were emailing them at all, whatever. But I think it's just important that we try to connect, right? Yeah. Instead of disengaging. It would be really easy to disengage because it's uncomfortable, but at least you tried. Yeah. And I would rather someone try and make a misstep than not try at all.
Yeah. And I don't at all share that story to like clear my conscience and get you to be like, hey, can you speak for all women and tell me I'm okay? And it was fine. I'm not trying to do that at all. It's just more like, well, that was an experience I had as a leader of volunteers and kind of took a, it was a misstep. So that was that. Is there anything else? Maybe there's something we didn't cover. I didn't ask a question. Maybe you were like, I'm dying to share this. And this is that moment to kind of share it. And maybe it'll spur on some more conversation.
I think, so we've talked a lot about perspective as a volunteer working with staff members, but I think it's important to also keep in mind the value of staff to staff team relationships.
Yeah.
And remembering that your staff counterparts who are, if you're a guy on staff somewhere and you have a woman who's on staff with you, even if she's not on staff in your same ministry area, to remember that she may be having some interactions and struggles with congregants and volunteers that you will never have to have because you're a dude. I cannot tell you, being on staff at a church, the countless times that I had weird, creepy dudes trying to talk to me or trying to get my number or writing me notes. And it was very publicized that I was married. My husband was on staff with me. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you have gotten weird, creepy ladies sending you stuff. But no. I was talking to a friend about this the other day who is, she's actually my husband's employee. She's a worship pastor at our church as well. And we were talking about how I think probably more women on staff and ministry organizations experience this, but they're not willing to talk about it because they feel like they've done something wrong to bring it on. Or they don't want to talk about it and seem like they have invited inappropriate attention from men. And so I just want to get that out there.
Yeah.
And make sure the dudes out there know that there's probably been some instances where your female counterparts have experienced something really uncomfortable, and please be a safe place.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm sorry that you've had to endure that and that you've had to face that and potentially had to, what it sounds like, face it in a alone, in a sense of being alone in that ministry setting. I apologize for that. Not for anybody else's sake, but just, I feel for you. So I'm sorry that that's happened. This is why we're having these conversations. This is one of the reasons why we're having these conversations, is because this wasn't done well beforehand. And it's one of those things that we talked about at the beginning, where going through expectations, setting up boundaries, communication, all these different things and expectations up front, and doing due diligence on our end can help diminish, hopefully diminish and prevent those types of situations to come up.
Yeah, for sure.
Or also being able to then address them if and when they do, to create a protective environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to continue to talk about building better teams. We're going to have more conversation this month about it. And we're going to touch on it from a bunch of different perspectives. Our hope is that that this helps in some way, that you can look at building these teams for your ministry context as something that, that you can do, and you feel empowered to it, and you're equipped with some different perspectives than you wouldn't have before to make it better and to make it at its best. So stay tuned, keep checking back, like and subscribe, do all those things, and come hang out with us. So Maggie, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your experience.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Peace.